The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
Yeah, found it. I might have to post it. I just shipped, S-H-I-P-P-E-D, my pants. It's a Kmart. The first thing that occurs to me is Kmart actually, yes, does still exist. So anyway, but all right, moving on, pressing on, 866-660-5759. I knew that I wanted to bring that up to Mike because it was really kind of funny. Yesterday, 11-something, Matt texts me. And Matt never texts me unless, like, some huge vault of commercials that we just did that morning has somehow vanished and we need to redo them the following day. But he was directing me to, he's like, are you listening to Mike? I said, well, I will now. And I fired up sort of the online listening that you can always get on the 660 AM The Answer app, which everyone should have. And there was Mike navigating these tricky waters. And so I said, I want to bring this up. And he said that he brought it up in his show yesterday and was surprised at the, I don't want to say grudging admissions or grudging agreement. Maybe it is grudging or maybe it's hesitant or whatever. The bottom line is, in a season when so many things are going our way, one of the reasons for a Trump win, if we are blessed to get one, is that not only do we specifically want him back, but a lot of people who may not even be all that politically or ideologically wired know that the borders are ridiculous. Crime is ridiculous. The economy is ridiculous. Education is filled with indoctrination. Environmental extremism is robbing us of all kinds of consumer choice. Gender radicalism is poisoning our culture. So all of those things will accrue to Trump's benefit. So many issues are just going our way. The one that is not in the broad public mind is abortion. Now, I, as a pro-lifer, I am thrilled. That day when Rhonda got in my intercom ear, I'm sitting there yammering because it's, you know, what I do. But, and I knew that the ruling was coming. It's like, tell me when it comes. That day when the Dobbs decision came down and Roe v. Wade was finally dashed against the rocks. It was great. It needed to happen. It didn't need to happen because I'm pro-life or because anybody's pro-life. I don't look to the Supreme Court to do my political bidding. It needed to happen because Roe v. Wade was unconstitutional. It was flat out stone cold unconstitutional. There's no right to abortion in the Constitution. There never has been. It was 50 years of pernicious fiction. And to have that undone was constitutionally correct, which should make everyone happy. But as a pro-lifer, I was, of course, ecstatic because Roe v. Wade kept states from protecting the unborn to the degree that they wish. And now they can. And now Texas does. And Florida does. And some other states do as well. And the current status quo is that in California and New York and other blue states, they can maintain whatever ghoulishly permissive abortion laws that they wish. That's the landscape after the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Is that enough for those of us in the pro-life cause? No. We're looking to protect the unborn in every state that we can. So there are two ways we can do that. One is to fan out into these various other states and say, hey, be like us in Texas and in Florida. Start protecting the unborn. Yeah, good luck in California and Texas and the like. And in the mid-19th century, did abolitionists say, let's fan out across the various states and say, hey, ban slavery like we've done? like it was going to happen in Georgia and Alabama and South Carolina. Nah, we kind of needed to end slavery, didn't we? And we can spend all day talking about the moral distinctions and differences between slavery and abortion, but the bottom line was, it was a moral aberration that we found a national reason to address. I completely view abortion in the same way. I completely support a federal abortion ban because I want our country to uniformly protect the unborn. Now, here's where the rubber meets the road. I'm a talk show guy. I can do whatever I want. But if I'm running for office trying to, you know, win, do I need to be telegraphing that every day in a country that is, I was talking in the segment with Mike about the idea whose time has come. There is nothing as strong as an idea. There's no force like an idea whose time has come. The federal abortion ban may not be an idea whose time has come. And by that I mean, right now, if we're out here, you know, wearing sandwich boards to that effect and, you know, and flogging that prospect, we're going to scare the living daylights out of people and we're going to lose. So what do we do? 866-660-5759. Let's head out Lamar County. We're in Paris. Jacob, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. Good Wednesday to you. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, Mark. Hey, I think two things can be true at the same time, as you often say. I think most people, the vast majority of the country, agrees with us on abortion, us being the pro-life crowd. Mm-hmm. But I think Mike is also right in that we're losing on the abortion issue electorally. So how can those two both be true at the same time? Well, I recently had an experience with a moderate friend of mine that kind of illustrates what the problem might be. I was talking to him, and somehow we got on politics, and I mentioned I was a DeSantis supporter, and he said, "Oh no, I can't." You know, he expressed he wasn't a huge fan of Biden, but he said, "I can't do DeSantis or Haley because of their position on abortion." Mm-hmm. I said, "Why is that?" He said, "Well, my wife had to have a couple of abortions because she had miscarriages before they had their one daughter," and he said, "I don't want my daughter to end up with an ectopic pregnancy and not be able to do something about it." And I said, "Well, that's not what DeSantis or Haley or any pro-life person thinks."
Right.
And he said, "No, it's happening now." He said, the court case in Texas. I said, her life was not in danger. That was I believe the kid had her baby had a fatal diagnosis.
And encephaly, a terrible condition. But terminating the pregnancy was not a threat to her life. And that's where the line is set in Texas. Go ahead. Continue.
Exactly. I think that may be our problem in that we're not getting that message across that, look, no, we agree that you know, the government should not be involved when it comes down to the mother's life versus the baby's life. But in all other cases, the government should step in and protect the child.
That is superbly put. And look, it just took us a couple of 2 minutes to sort of explain that, as you did to your friend. And it's hard because the pro-aborts are out there every day saying that all the pro-lifers, what they want to do is strip decision-making away from all of these women who have all of these, you know, terrible conditions. You're not going to be able to have something with an ectopic pregnancy or with a miscarriage. None. But at that point, guess what? The life issue has been settled by God, one could say. And that's not something that any of the heartbeat bills or anything are going to address. Explaining things better will always be a wise path. Jacob, thank you. Appreciate it very, very much. 866-660-5759. We are in Palo Pinto. Tom, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Good morning. I appreciate the previous caller's point of view. If I were a candidate running, and you're a better wordsmith than I am, something along the lines, yeah, if I were a monarch, I would support all this. Mm-hmm. But I would try and link it instead to we're a republic form of government. We had the 13th Amendment. I would try and link abortion to the civil rights. It is a civil right. Mm-hmm. and the 13th Amendment. And as much as I might want to make the country abortion free, except life of the mother, we've got to pass an amendment. I would have a better wordsmith than me come up with that.
Okay, you're on solid ground in terms of explanation. We don't need an amendment for this. We chose
but
to.
Wouldn't that give it the solidness that the
it would. But it's also way harder. I mean, it's extremely. I mean, there. I mean, a federal law is a federal law. Federal law saying you can't do X means you can't do X. And I think
the federal law can be overturned with the next.
Correct. The constitutional amendment giveth. When I say giveth and taketh away, the hard argument is that it's way harder to do. But you're correct. The benefit of it is you can't jack with it afterward. You're completely correct about that. Here's the civil rights of the unborn. Obviously, that resonates with me. I think the last gentleman said that a real strong majority agree with us on pro-lifeness. I think they certainly do on like partial birth and late term stuff like that. But there's still millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of Americans who absolutely do not affix those kind of rights to the baby at 10 weeks, 12 weeks, 15, 18 weeks. You know, if you're not seeing it, it's not, you know, nice and pink in the maternity ward. It's like it's not even there to millions of Americans. So affixing those kinds of civil rights protections is going to be an uphill climb.
One other observation, mm-hmm. and this may be a little bit out of bounds, but I was always going to support Trump in the general election. Mm-hmm. And yes, I was a Haley supporter until the day after South Carolina.
Thank you.
Didn't Haley catch a ton of grief for expressing the very sentiment that Mike Gallagher, who hated Trump, Haley?
Yes.
Didn't? Yeah.
Yes. She yes. 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 She did. You are very astute in that regard, and caught a lot of grief and flack for seeming insufficiently pro-life. There was a list of things that I went after Nikki Haley for: the globalization, the forever wars, any one of a number of things. But I think she might have had a pretty good head on her shoulders about the messaging of pro-lifeness for 2024, for this election cycle in particular. Tom, thank you enormously. Real quick, because things like this matter, I didn't want to give Kate Cox's baby the wrong condition. This is important. Anencephaly is when, like, your brain's outside your head. This is a child that is not going to live. It's just not. That was not Kate Cox's case. Kate Cox's baby had trisomy 18. Which some children survive. The Texas abortion law, life of the mother threatened bar was not met. So all these stories that say Kate Cox's life was in danger, no, it was not. 8:25.
Oh, my darling,
not three times on the ceiling if you want me.
That is 28-year-old Tony Orlando. Twice on the pipes.
If the answer is no.
Little Knock Three Times, which was their second hit there, Tony Orlando and Dawn.
Means you meet me in the.
Do the first one, Candida. It's kind of a similar record.
Twice on the pipes.
Dang, clang. Anyway, Tony Orlando, 80 today. I sang Tie a Yellow Ribbon with Tony Orlando at a veterans event about a decade ago. That's like meeting Neil Armstrong, quite frankly. It's, I mean, let's not go nuts here, but it just in terms of stuff I did not think I would ever do. So anyway, well, here's something I definitely do, and that's go to the bottom of the hour news with Nikki Whaley and then come back to your calls on various things, how pro-life to be, and various other things in the news. I want to take a look at a couple of things like getting rid of DEI at Texas schools. Folks are freaking out. The right folks are freaking out, meaning it's the right thing to do. More of the weirdness of the Rashee Rice car accident. and that's just strange. And Mike Tyson was on Hannity last night. I got to ask Mike about this before we're done this week, before we send him off to Japan, perhaps never to return. The whole Mike Tyson, Jake Paul thing that happens at Jerry World on July 20th, either one of the most compelling and fascinating things in the history of sport, or just something really horrible that should not even happen. I'm not sure where I am on that. I know I'm ready to go to the newsroom, though, so let's do 8:31. Mark Davis, here's Nikki.
Oh, play me a blues song and fade down the light.
Back in the late 60s, there's a band called Fairport Convention, and I thought they were quirky and wonderful. This guy was sort of the formative force behind that, the great Richard Thompson. This is Waltzing is for Dreamers from a solo Richard Thompson album called Amnesia. And he's just great, just great. Wrote Tear-Stained Letter, one of the best Patti Loveless songs. The great Richard Thompson is 75.
Care for each other till the banner reach the end.
Alrighty, 866-660-5759. So tomorrow, it appears, we are going to have the benefit of speaking to somebody who has been a big force in one of the big Texas stories that we're about to talk about right now. Senator Brandon Creighton of the Texas State Senate, who is very much behind SB 17, which is getting rid of DEI, which Governor Abbott signed, and thank goodness. And if you need just a minute, but Mark, the diversity is wonderful, and equity and inclusion, aren't these good things? In their purest vacuum sense, of course they are. Diversity, when it occurs in life, is great. Inclusion, when it involves you being welcoming and open to people, is a fantastic thing. But like Dennis Prager always said, the left just kills everything it touches, including the language and these concepts. Equity is not the same as equality of opportunity. Equity is equality of result, which is rank, stone-cold unfairness. It's racism of the tallest order. And so when we're doing things like this, when we're engaged in this kind of racial bean counting, when we're engaged in quotas and race preference, I mean, it's kind of funny. I went through my entire life, my entire childhood, you know, that whole Dr. King legacy. His assassination anniversary tomorrow, April 4th, 1968. And I was 10, and this was at a time when I'm being told with every fiber of my education and upbringing that race preferences are wrong. Dr. King's words, you know, go back a few years, August 1963, the I Have a Dream speech, the dream about people being judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Silly me, I believed him. And yet now, today, race baiters and activists saying that we do need to bypass qualifications and merit in order to focus primarily on what I call the pigment and the plumbing, on race and sex and other irrelevancies? No, that's always going to be a hard no. DEI is that poison brought to the workplace. DEI is that poison brought to higher education. So in Texas, thankfully, we've gotten rid of it. SB 17 did that. Senator Brandon Creighton will be with us tomorrow to talk about how that all, you know, came about and where that all goes and what it all means. What it means right now, and one of the reasons we wanted him, and I'm glad to have secured him, glad Rhonda reached out and got him, is because the University of Texas just laid off like 60 people. 60 people they had taken up space there at UT. Doing, you know, teaching kids, English composition or nuclear core design. Nope. Enforcing the poison that is DEI. Evan Anderson had a story about this just a couple hours ago in the wee hours on Channel 5.
Strong feelings on both sides of this issue. According to UT Austin, these changes are to bring the university into fuller compliance with Senate Bill 17. That's a state law that was approved last year that bans DEI initiatives in public universities. And that went into effect in January. An employee who works on the team says they were notified of the terminations at an emergency meeting yesterday. UT's president, Jay Hartzell, says student-facing services and jobs will be retained for the remainder of the semester. As for the staff members who were fired, he said employees can apply to other open positions at the university.
It is really disappointing for them.
No, hang on a second. Hang on. Evan gave the quote from UT, from the UT brass. And yes, these people, listen, I'm not looking for folks to get fired, you know, just in and of themselves. Go find useful, worthwhile things for them to do. But let me back this up 5 seconds, because what we have now is the disguised voice of a disgruntled UT employee. Here we go. This is somebody, I guess, for fear of retribution or something like this, but get a load of this.
It is really disappointing for them not to see what goes on day to day with these students and be out of touch with what they are doing by dropping this bomb.
So the American Association of
dropping this bomb. I'll tell you what dropped the bomb. What dropped the bomb was the notion that kids should not be allowed into school based on, you know, grades or test scores or merit, but that your race should give you an advantage. That, listen, it was wrong for white folks to have an advantage. We rode that train for a long time, and that was wrong. The color of your skin should be as irrelevant as Dr. King wanted it to be. But sadly, we have this notion of racial revenge justice in today's modern race-baiting activism, that the way to atone, the way to make right, you know, a long period of injustice is to victimize today's innocent people with further injustice, with like reverse injustice. Yeah. That's going to be a hard no as well.
University professors and the NAACP.
Here are the people. Let's go back to the thing again. Here's who's upset.
Are doing by dropping this bomb.
So the American Association of University Professors.
The American Association of University Professors. University professors. This is why, you know, God bless UT. And a bunch of y'all are sending your kids down to Austin, and you'll get a lovely education, and you'll have fun at the football games and the basketball games and Austin, because, hey, Austin. But wow, what a minefield. Higher education has become everywhere. The university professors in their umbrella organization now want race to be a determining factor in so many various factors of life. What a sad, sad moment that is. The Texas School Boards Association and their radical liberal activism. The Texas State Teachers Association, all about this trans day of visibility on Easter. By the way, going back to an earlier call, this is why school choice is absolutely vital. Because the public school down the road from you could very well be a fantastic place, a palace of hardworking teachers and good-hearted people working to give your kids the best education possible. In fact, that's the greatest likelihood. Or it could be a slime pit of radical politics and indoctrination. You've got to have choice. Anyway, so there was the university professors. Who else?
And the NAACP said they had heightened concerns about the layoffs because many of the employees who were fired had been recently reassigned to positions not related to DEI. The group's letter said they will, quote, continue to accumulate information to address what we believe to be potential attacks on First Amendment freedoms. An employee told our sister station down in Austin they were told they will be let go on July 5th. Tuesday's news comes a week after State Senator Brandon Crichton warned schools of consequences if they do not comply with SB 17. UT's president says the school will redistribute funds for DEI programs to research and teaching.
Whoa, shocker! By the way, Brandon Crichton will be with us tomorrow. We have a time on that, Rhonda? That'll be 8:35 tomorrow, Senator Crichton. And I think what got him in the news this week was he essentially said, look, we may be calling hearings. We may be calling various Texas universities to specifically ask them and make sure that they have purged the cancer of DEI from their campuses. All right, let me take the pause and come back. Many are clamoring for today's Star Telegram column. I'm writing about the diverging political fates of Ken Paxton and Dade Phelan. These are guys whose political fortunes are, shall we say, headed in opposite directions. Details next. Mark Davis, 847. From 1953, Secret Love, Doris Day as Calamity Jane. Soft spot in my heart for this. We did this in junior high school. I was Henry Miller, owner of the Golden Garter. Wasn't a huge role. I made the most of it. Doris Day, born.
And my secret love's no secret.
What a voice she had.
Anymore.
Doris Day, born 101 years ago. She lived a long time. She only passed away about 5 years ago, so good on you, Doris. Okay, so here we go. You ready? I always look for putting my thumb on the pulse of what people are thinking about and talking about. And I thought about Ken Paxton. I thought about Dade Phelan. I thought, wow, talk about two guys whose trains are headed in opposite directions. And so this morning's brand new Star Telegram column. These are tough times for Texans who have hitched their political wishes to the downfall of Attorney General Ken Paxton and the House speakership of Dade Phelan. Paxton's criminal prosecutions will be whimpering to an end, and so may Phelan's political career. A May 28th Republican runoff will determine whether voters in Phelan's Beaumont district want him in the House at all, even if he prevails versus challenger David Covey. Speculation was already swirling that he would not survive the next speaker election in January. How did one of the most powerful politicians in the state wind up so hazardously on the ropes? Part of the answer lies with the tastes of Republican voters who have wearied of House obstructions on valued issues like school choice and election integrity. Even as the legislature boasts other conservative achievements of recent sessions, from protecting the unborn to bolstering gun rights to stemming gender extremism. But as loudly as Phelan's allies try to get voters to give him credit for those wins, two matters of his own choosing have landed him on the brink of extinction: a rushed, secretive, and spectacularly failed Paxton impeachment, and a reliance on Democrats to bolster his power base, leading to the naming of Democrat chairs for House committees in a supposedly red state. Representative Tom Oliverson of suburban Houston has already announced his candidacy for Speaker, citing as one factor the arrogance with which Phelan expected members to obediently fall in line with the impeachment parade without a full public examination of its basis. When I spoke with him this week, he described an overall lack of focus in the way certain conservative priorities have been sidelined, and a dwindling tolerance for committee chairs who harbor direct hostility to agenda items favored by the House's solid Republican majority. The same voter distaste that jeopardizes Phelan threatens other Republicans in the runoffs, and it spelled outright defeat for others on March 5th, and as a group, they don't seem to be taking it well. After Representative Glenn Rogers' famous tantrum in a Weatherford newspaper upon his loss to Mike Olcott in House District 60 west of Fort Worth, now we get Kronda Timmish in Denton County similarly griping in an op-ed after voters failed to sufficiently appreciate her in House District 65. Nobody likes to admit falling out of favor, but none of these beleaguered incumbents lost because of dark money political action committee ad campaigns. They are the victims of self-inflicted wounds in the form of decisions that repelled an increasingly conservative Republican electorate. In Timmish's case, there'd be more empathy for her grievances if her own ads had not absurdly stated that her opponent shared a Beto O'Rourke-style wish to defund border security and give in to Biden. That opponent, of course, was Mitch Little, one of Paxton's impeachment attorneys, a particularly fitting beneficiary of voter disdain for the members who served as accessories to Phelan's aggressions. He was also an immediate source of comment last week, calling for these chapters to come to a close as the prospect of Paxton's trial on securities fraud charges evaporated in a settlement with prosecutors requiring restitution, some community service, and ethics training. The fever dream of Paxton's pursuers, the prospect of him tasting the wrath of a deep blue Harris County jury, thus popped in a bubble burst of disillusionment stretching from Austin to Washington, where U.S. Senator John Cornyn had mocked a possible 2026 primary challenge by taunting Paxton that it would be, quote, hard to run from prison, Ken. Well, Paxton won't be going to prison, and Phelan may not be returning to the House. It's a good time for those on the short end of recent GOP disputes to get some clarity. Rhonda Timmish isn't the only scorned figure lamenting that Republicans need to stop the infighting before it, quote, destroys our state from the inside out. What they need to realize is their fealty to Phelan and their hostility to Paxton are what started these battles. And the current swell of conservative reaction is the sound of those battles coming to an end. Huh. My brand new Star Telegram column, find it at startelegram.com or on my X feed there on the Twitter, there at Mark Davis. It's 8:58.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.